Welcome back, everybody, to Sources from the Sofa. This is Rome. We got Aaron, Jason. We got a lot to recap. It's recap weekend. We're going to be recapping starting from Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday. We had a doubleheader today, as well as a game seven in the ALCS. We had F1 in Austin, which was a thrilling race, in my opinion. I enjoyed watching the whole thing and found out my daughter loves watching races as daddy drives really fast. So hopefully she doesn't tell her mom that, but she really loved it. She was really bummed when she saw her driver drop from like 12th to 19th.
I mean,
to give you like a hint
Rome,
of who she was going for.
Rome, you were in a relationship with her for 6 years. So I'm sure you drove her around. She knows how you drive.
Yeah.
I don't think that's a mystery anymore.
Yeah.
You just need your daughter as soon as you guys are at a street light or whatever, and then it turns. You just need her to get all like crofty on the nouns, go, "It's lights out and away we go."
Dude, she really loved it, man. I was really excited. I tried switching back to the football game. She's like, "What?"
She's like, "Why don't?" She's like, "Daddy, why don't we ever watch this? Because it's on at 5 a.m. in the morning."
Yeah, you're still asleep, baby. She was going for Hadjar, right?
Isaac Hadjar.
Isaac Hadjar. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah, it wasn't a good
time. Is
that
the pink car?
No. That's either Pierre Gasly or Franco Gasly,
Colpin. Gasly, my bad. It was Gasly, yeah.
Okay.
She was in tears when she saw it. He was in 12th and down to 19th.
Yeah.
Getting lapped by Verstappen there on the final like two laps. Like, oh, daddy, he's going to get first. Oh, no, that's the guy lapping him.
She's like, what's happening?
Gasly was so bad. Colapinto was like trying to pass him and they told him, hey, don't pass. He's like, what? He's slow.
He's slow. Did you hear that? The shit talking for like 18th and 19th place.
Hey,
I'm like, what's going on here?
Even the announcer's like, you know, he's fighting for his job. That's why he wants to pass him.
Yeah.
It's fair. It's fair.
That's so funny. Anyways, F1. Classic baseball games as well. Let's jump straight into the NFL, though. This was week seven. We had a doubleheader Monday night. We're recording Monday night at 8:45. We're at recording halftime, really. Seattle's up 14-6 against the Texans. Really great game between the Lions and the Buccaneers. I don't know if you guys caught that. Maybe we could do like a quick little 2-minute recap of there. I just thought, you know, first of all, I'll also set that Detroit didn't go for the field goal when they went for like a fourth and one. It was like on their own 15. And I was just like worried about the point spread so I get another victory this week. I'm like, dude, I hope that doesn't come bite me at the butt at the end. But really good game. Evans started in my fantasy league, 0 points.
Done for the year.
Yeah. Tough.
Is he out
tough
for the
way
year?
To go out. I don't know, man. Probably he's not getting 1,000 yards though.
Well, he got a concussion and a shoulder injury, right?
I thought I concussion. Heard the shoulder. ESPN said broken collarbone.
Oh, really?
Let's see.
So pretty much mostly out towards the end of the year. So
most of the season,
he might be back for playoffs, probably.
Yeah, that's usually worst case 4 weeks to 8 week injury. So what are we in week? Yeah, he might come back the final. Might be back around the same time Joe Burrow's back. Same kind of window.
That's crazy.
Well, that ends the streak of what, I don't know if it's 11 or 12 years, 1,000 yards receiving, right?
Yeah. It's done. It's over. It is over. And he's our age, right? 38? 37?
Something like that.
So it's going to be tough recovery. I'm dealing with my own knee injury right now. Look at this is going to be a longer recovery than I want it to be. But it started off with Bengals. We recorded that night, did the lines for the week. Bengals with the big upset in the icy hot bowl.
Mike Evans only 32, so he's not that old.
Oh, okay. That's not bad.
It's not a leg injury, so I think good form going forward.
I think you're trying to de-age us a little, Rome. We're more in that Flacco, Aaron, Rodgers age range.
We are.
In the all-gray showdown on Thursday night.
Hey, but 11 seasons, though.
They shined. They still got it.
Yeah, they shined.
Hall of Famers.
Really good. Hall of Famers. Man. Well, both of them? Flacco, too?
Maybe not so much Flacco, but...
Yeah, but still, like, he's done well everywhere, though. Like, I give him a lot of props, man.
Could be an interesting study when you look at his career numbers at the end. Like, you compare to him versus, like, you know, is it like Eli Manning or some of these other guys that you say are shoo-in for a Hall of Fame? Like, Flacco's got the Super Bowl ring. He's going to have tons of numbers put up here by the end.
Honestly, if they had kept starting him at the other places instead of waiting till like week 8 or 10, his numbers would be a lot better. Let's just be honest.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. Yeah, really
it's it's crazy because you put him in at any team just middle of the season. Because it was it 3 years ago when he just joined the Browns midseason, they were just an absolute train wreck and brought him
took
in
him to the playoffs
single-handedly, you know, just winning games with them.
He might get the Bengals there too. I mean, we talked last week, Rome, you tried to declare him dead. Me and Jason said, wait, hold the break. Life support, but not quite buried dead. And here they are.
Well, that's why Tomlin was pissed off that the Browns would
I don't blame, you know, Tomlin
trade for their quarterback to the Bengals, because everyone could have benefited from this. And then, you know,
look at that's the Browns sticking it to Pittsburgh. That's all it is.
I think
right
so.
There. It really
yeah,
is.
They're like, if we can have a good season, no one in the division can have a good season. They just fucked everyone over.
Yeah,
pretty
there
wild.
There was some pretty good Cleveland sports radio after Flacco had that performance and everything, just ripping why we traded this guy and within the division. We'd have a meltdown over like the Browns.
Oh, dude, I love it. I love local radio when they're just like blasting their teams, man. There was like a lot of clips this week for some reason. I can't remember who the other team was. Once it pops up, I'm pretty sure we'll remember it. I think it was Seattle. It could have been Seattle baseball. No, not Seattle baseball. Milwaukee. Anyways,
that was a brutal series for them.
Brutal series. But back to NFL. We were rewarded with a standout performance by the Rams in London. Demolished the Jags. Jags now lost 3 in a row. And then everything else, though, it was entertaining game between the Giants and Broncos. Giants should have won that. They gave that one away. They have a paperclip for a defensive coordinator over there. Colts win a big one against the Chargers in dominating fashion. We talked about it. I thought that might go that way, but we all had the Chargers, I believe, and Chargers don't look anything of what they were the first 3 weeks, losing a golden opportunity, and now it's really tied up and jumbled up right there in their division. Pack barely escaped Arizona. Cowboys manhandled the Commanders in surprising fashion. Their defense, I think that was like man coverage is when they had like the most success. It was like 60% of the snaps. Lions won a big one today. 49ers, really impressive with pitch-packed work on offense and defense. Robert Saleh doing a phenomenal job as the DC over there. And Shanahan, you know, possibly coach of the year candidate. Bears win a good one, right? Again, against the Saints. Solid victory. Browns beat the shit out of the Dolphins. That is my nominee for ass whipping of the week. Once the weather changed, it was going to be windy. And I don't know why the Dolphins went away from the run game and they just had Tua passing him more times. And while they were doing a highlight of him throwing an interception, he literally threw another interception during that highlight on another broadcast. It was really hilarious. And then it started making the socials. Dolphins are done. Panthers, close one against the Jets. Go figure. Eagles, Vikings. I didn't catch too much this game, so you guys have to tell me a little about that. Patriots, Titans. So it was really tight, but Patriots manhandle them in the second half, and Rabel wins the grudge rematch, I guess. Thoughts on most impressive victories of the week for the NFL?
One of the early ones you said, I don't know if impressive is the right word where you put it, but the Broncos-Giants game, I mean, this was a game where 33 points in the fourth quarter by the Broncos. So maybe it wasn't the greatest game, but man, the fourth quarter, the Broncos put up, I mean, something of a, I mean, it's kind of, I'm legendary is overstating, but just it's an all-time game, really, when you look at with some of the comebacks and things like that, and an all-time just collapse by the Giants at the same time too, for what, you know, Daboll. So your guy, Rome, I mean, you and Aaron backing him for forever. Okay.
I don't like Daboll, but
I like Daboll. I'll back him.
You know what's funny? Yeah, I'll back you know what's him. Funny? I was thinking about it. It's like the Giants, man. They got like a really fast car, right? Like a Lamborghini, but they drive it like some 19-year-old that's never been in the car before. Daboll's not the right guy for it.
I'm going to go
the
opposite, Rome.
Right defensive coordinator to it.
They don't have a Lamborghini. They have a Honda or some cheap-ass car they try to drive like a Lamborghini now that they got Dart in there. And it ain't got no brakes.
That's good.
It ain't got no brakes on it. Dart cost him that game. That interception cost him the game, and that was just a bad pick.
Yeah, I think there's probably a ton of moments when you're talking, you're going into the fourth quarter. I mean, really, when you looked at the Thursday night game prior, where they feel like they found something with Jackson Dart and Scadaboo, and like, hey, this is the identity of this Giants team, and you're up, what were they up, 20-0 going into the fourth?
19-0, yeah.
19-0, so they're 19-0.
Was it 26-8? Like, was 6 minutes ago? 6 minutes ago in the fourth quarter?
Just insane, like, drives it. And then, because at a certain point, when the Broncos took the lead, they're like, man, they scored too quickly, because there was like 2 minutes left in the game at that point. And then the Giants go down the field and like, there's just not enough time left. It just crazy completions.
Well, you talk about it. But even the Giants scored too quickly, right? They left like 35 seconds of a timeout, and all they needed was a field goal because the guy can't make an extra point. So that even, I mean, they missed two extra points, a 2-point conversion. So the Giants had left 4 points off the board, which looked irrelevant for, 58 minutes of that game.
Dude, they got the touchdown with, 30-something seconds left. He misses another extra point that makes it possible for the Denver Nuggets, the Broncos, to win by field goal. And, they just complete, two long passes, got on field goal range, and Les just nailed it. But that was tough, man. I don't even know who their kicker was.
Will Lutz? Is it Lutz for Broncos?
Yeah,
are you talking about for the
Giants? Giants.
Well, what's his name? Graham's hurt, so it's some guy they just picked up a couple weeks ago. But what's funny is on that first pass that Bo Nix completed, I don't even think he was going to that guy. I think he was going to Mims cutting across, and it missed him, and Sutton just happened to be squatted down and caught it. He really looked at it, I think, but they may deny that.
No, that was a crazy game, man. I caught the second half of the fourth quarter when they were making the comeback. I was just trying to keep in touch with the points here for, I guess, the spread contest. But pretty miraculous. I guess Bo Nix got two passing touchdowns, two rushing touchdowns that fourth quarter. 32 points or 33 points in the fourth quarter. That is ridiculous. And Denver's 5-2, but, man, these victories have been, tight. Very, very tight.
It's been tough. We talk about your fantasy team a lot, Rome. I was a big Bo Nix believer in one of my leagues, and that fourth quarter really turned it around for me on one of my teams, although I was playing him in a different league and just absolutely demolished me. But, I've been waiting for a Bo Nix performance like this any game now. But, no, I mean, Aaron's been on the Broncos since last season with Sean Payton and what Bo Nix has. You're right. They've been close, but I think that's where – you just want to get victories in the NFL, and then matchups and all sorts of crazy circumstances, happen. And in a division that they're in right now, the Chargers, we thought, a month or so ago, they were going to run away with this thing, and now they have fallen back. The Chiefs, people left them for dead at 0-2. They have a dominant victory and up there. And so even scraping by, the Broncos are, there's a lot of division games ahead of them. 5-2 leading this division right now is exactly where they want to be. And, they'll have some tight games against these division opponents. But I think if you're 7 games in, 5-2 with Denver, you're really happy with yourself.
Pretty good, actually. Yeah. 4 straight wins in a row.
Well, Rome, I mean, Broncos are what, 5-2? They could easily be 7-0. I mean, they don't get that penalty against the Colts. The Chargers beat them on a field goal late, but they could also be, sitting here 3-4. Yeah. So, I mean, they would take 5-2 given what they've done. I mean, benching Bo Nix for Herbert, like you did, Rome, was the right call. Herbert was lighting it up all game. Nix put on a fourth quarter that was great, but let's be real. He probably had 5 points going into the fourth with 8 minutes ago. I mean, you were sitting there God damn, I made the right decision.
No, I was destined to lose this week, man. I was destined to lose.
Well, you got beat. Yeah, you got destroyed.
We can talk about it later. I got destroyed, dude.
But I would say, just going back with the Broncos, you're right, Rome, close wins, but they really haven't found their offense. And maybe till this fourth quarter is the point we say, hey, the Broncos really found something. But, the last week, that was an abysmal offensive performance they had, barely snuck away with that victory. And just, there's been so inconsistent. And then the first 3 quarters of this game versus the Giants were just absolutely nothing. This is maybe the springboard to get them. So if they find something offensively here down the stretch and they still have, good defensive play, the Broncos can really do something.
Yeah. I mean, you go back to the game in London and this one, that was 6 straight quarters of only 3 points. Going back to this second, third, and fourth in London, the first three here. So well, yeah, I mean that offense
that great either.
That offense had really struggled. The defense is really good to keep them in that game. I mean, Dart and that offense has been really explosive. I mean, we talk about a team. I mean, really, the Giants should be 4-0 in Dart starts. Let's be honest. If they don't turn the ball over five times against the Saints, they win that game. They were better than the Saints. They were better than the Broncos for, you know, 55 minutes of that ball game. They got special there. I know you guys are hating on Dable, but I think Dable's a good coach. I think if they get rid of him, that'd be a bad mistake. And, you know, but we'll see. We'll see what happens.
I just – circumstances mean a lot, and so I hate judging that. But then at the same time, you see the retread coaches that go through or the coordinators that everyone falls in love with to a certain point. Dayball – I mean, Robert Saleh might be one of the best, you know, examples right now. Some of my friends are talking about it, where it's like, hey, this guy's an incredible defensive coordinator, but head coach he is not. Dayball, I mean, you have that conversation. Is he an incredible offensive coordinator? But he's just not the top guy. Oh. It's different skill sets between head coach and coordinator. And I don't know if Dayball matches it.
Look at the Jets now, though. They're 0-7. He must have been doing something right to even get them to what they were doing last year.
Saleh would be a good head coach. I think their mistake was their offensive coordinators were always terrible. They're always first time guys. They weren't any good. Now they're not even coordinators in the league now, or even they're basically position coaches. And I mean, they're Aaron Rodgers, who knows if he doesn't ever tear his Achilles. I mean, he's looking a lot better the second year back from it. Who knows what happens that first year. But yeah, I mean, with, you know, terrible quarterback play, he was winning 7-8 games a year there. I don't think they would be 0-7. I mean, they just benched Fields. That experiment looks like it's done and over with. Going back to Dable, I mean, he brought the best out of Josh Allen, brought the best out of Daniel Jones before Steichen took it to another level, and now Dart. I think there's a lot to like about Dable still in New York. I think as far as, you know, GM and the stuff up there, they made a ton of mistakes, but I like the way they've drafted and they've gone heavy on defense. They don't really have a ton. And this is about Neighbors too for the last three games. So imagine if they get him back. I like it. I think it's going to get another shot there. If not, he'll get another gig somewhere else down the road.
Yeah. Let's circle back to the games though. So you mentioned that was like one of your games, Jason, and you know, the games that kind of stuck out.
I mean, you said most impressive or ass whipping. I mean, the Chiefs over the Raiders, like
that was an ass whipping, but
31-0. I mean, man, the Raiders have just gotten worse and worse week over week right now.
Yeah. Them Dolphins and Browns.
I mean, there's a lot of ass whippings. I mean, Jason just touched on the Raiders, Dolphins. Let's be honest. Jacksonville did not show up in London. I mean, that game was brutal to watch. I mean, it seemed like three and out by both teams for about like 8 possessions in a row. So that was bad. That was
Yeah, the Cowboys win, I put it up there too. The Commanders, I don't know this year. I mean, Rome, you give me a lot of flack with my Jaden Daniels takes and stuff all the time, you know, just the comparison of these quarterback classes right now. But I mean, they have not looked great so far this season. They're sitting at 3-4. The Cowboys, for all their faults, you know, defensively, they have something offensively, you know, and Javonte Williams has been a really good add. You give all your flack to Jerry Jones as a GM, but he's been, you know, really solid for them out of the backfield. You get CeeDee Lamb back. Pickens has been really good.
Pickens is phenomenal. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, he was acting like a true number one in CeeDee Lamb's absence. And now you get both of those guys out there. Prescott, for anyone, you know, he's been on First Take probably more than anyone likes, but he can throw the ball and they put up yards. And the Commanders, I don't know if they're going to find it right. Very competitive division now where they're saying, hey, the Cowboys were done. Now they're 3-3. The Commanders are sitting at 3-4 and searching for answers.
Well, and they're banged up. Jaden Daniels, man, he also led the team in rushing. He's too skinny. I think he's always been a little too light to handle that kind of punishment. And now he might be out some more games. It's just, you know, they have some wide receivers out, right? So it's going to be a tough year for them.
Yeah, the Commanders, you know, Rome, it's funny you touched on that kind of small running around being their lead rusher. They had another guy with there, what, a decade plus ago named Robert Griffin that was supposed to be the next big
yeah.
thing. And the same thing happened to him.
They ran to the ground in two seasons.
So they, like I said, I touched on it last week. I thought Chicago dominated their offensive line. Dallas dominated that offensive line again. And I don't care how good or mobile your quarterback is, if you don't have a good old line up front and a running game to complement it, you're in trouble. You know, Jason touched on, you know, Dak's light ended up good, but Williams has been great in the backfield. Like, Cowboys got a run game this year. That's what's helped their offense propel to another level. They're just not, hey, Dak, throw it 40, 50 times. Play action's been good. They got the two wide outs. Dallas is good offensively. Defensively, good. It's week to week.
They got better.
We'll see how they look this week coming up in Denver. But, I've touched on it. One week they play great. The next week you think they are and they just lay an egg. But I'm looking at the Commander schedule here. They've got – what do they got? They've got at KC, Seattle, Detroit the next three
games. They got a tough stretch.
And they're 3-4. Honestly, it's going to be tough for the Commanders. It's going to be tough for the Commanders to make the playoffs. It's going to be tough.
Yeah.
I mean, the Panthers – I mean, that take Jason gave last week on the Panthers, the seventh seed, you might want to store that one as a clip because –
It's got an outside shot. I'd say
it's about 18 to 22% of the chance of happening. It's got an outside shot.
It's got an outside shot, man. I mean, it's a bad division.
That's really banged up too.
Bad division. And it's a good thing they won too, because they do have like some tough games coming up. The Panthers. They got Bills, Packers in the next 2 weeks.
How long is Bryce Young out for? A week?
Don't know.
Okay, because I believe he's going to miss this upcoming game. Dalton's going to play, which I don't think is bad for them, honestly. Dalton's still going to play.
They got the Bills visiting, and Bills desperately need a win.
Yeah, they do.
And then they go into Green Bay after that, and Green Bay hasn't really put together like a
Green Bay plays well at home. On the road, I don't know what you're going to get from them, but at home, they're pretty solid.
They have not put a solid game since their week one victory over the Lions.
Say it right now, Rome, I like the Steelers Sunday night. I like Rodgers to beat them Sunday night.
Dude, I love that. Steelers should have won this past week, man. That was a nice potential game-winning drive at the end. But the defense, expensive defense, and they haven't really been that great this year for the Steelers. Not that great. All right, what other games kind of stick out in your guys' mind? Either a big win or just demoralizing loss.
I mean, Rob, I don't want to turn this into a Bears program every year, but, you know, I'm locked into that game. I was fairly confident of all the takes I gave as we went through the spreads there that the Bears were going to easily defeat that 4.5-point spread or whatever it was and get a double-digit victory. And it was there the entire game. And I think defensively, what has given me the most encouragement for the Bears week over week after getting blown out by the Lions is how much better the defense has played. They've gotten guys back healthy with TJ Edwards, Kyler Gordon, Montez Sweat has really showed up big these past couple weeks and kind of proven, you know, worth the money that was paid to be their big time pass rusher and cause a disturbance. Don't even need it even in the sacks, but just really causing chaos in the backfield. This isn't a great Saints team, but they have gotten up on some people throughout the year and made things close. And I know, you know, Aaron, did you pick them in Survivor?
I did. I rolled to the Bears, man. I ain't no fool.
You weren't the only one. I had a friend hit me up and he's gotten on the Bears bandwagon, you know, since they drafted Caleb Williams, and he's been an adopted Bears fan, and we're going, and he calls me. I'm on a flight Friday night, you know, headed up to Rome in the Bay Area. I'm on the plane. I get this call from him. Like, what was this dude calling me for? And he's like, Jay, I got to know, seriously, do we win on Sunday? I'm like, yeah.
This is a guarantee.
We win, guarantee, I said. And I told him, I was like, my guy Aaron has got him in Survivor too. Because I know Aaron was going between them and the Patriots, which either one would have been good this Sunday. But yeah, just felt it with the Bears. I think offensively, still much to be desired. And the Bears, like the Broncos we talked about earlier, haven't really hit their stride offensively under Ben Johnson, but they found the running game the past couple of weeks with Swift.
Swift looked good.
Kyle Manungai has gotten some carries and going there too. So, I mean, those are the things. Aaron brought the point home with Williams and what he's doing for the Cowboys and Dak in that running game too. I think the same thing with Caleb and the Bears. Like, these guys can't be dropping back to pass 50 times a game and allowing defense to tee off on them. The running game's important, and I think you've seen that in some victories. So, but defensively for the Bears, that was the biggest thing. Dennis Allen was given a game ball by Ben Johnson at the after the game. You know, kind of a little bit of a revenge game for him. So I was encouraged by that. It wasn't obviously a big time opponent with the Saints, but you know, you're going into a stretch where the Bears are going to play your AFC North Rome for like the next month, you know, the next month or so. They got the Ravens, they got the Bengals, they got the Steelers coming up. Those aren't going to be easy games. Lamar's probably coming back. You get, you know, the fountain of youth to Joe Flacco. So they needed to win this game and put a stamp on it. You know, remind me, a year ago, the Bears were sitting at 4-2, and then the Hail Mary happened and wiped everything out. So we're back to kind of the same position, but I think we've gotten the type of wins, and I say we as the Bears, the past couple of weeks, that the Bears would have lost that Raiders game. They would have blown that Commanders game at some point, winning the turnover battle. But these are the wins this year that, you know, it's hard to win games in the NFL. And if you can win them in these margins, those are the ones that matter at the end of the year, on the ones that were a 50-50 toss-up that you should have won.
Raiders probably should have won that game. But yeah, they pull out the victory. That's something that they did not do last year. So good progress. And they won their they at least scored more than 21 points for their sixth game in a row. So.
Yeah, I mean, like Jason said, a nice win by the Bears. I think they got a lot of stuff cleaned up after the bye week, especially the run game. The run game looks a lot better. That defense got healthy. They're looking a lot better. Other impressive wins. I mean, it's a bad team, but the Patriots, 3 straight road wins. That's impressive.
4-0 away.
Yeah. And, I mean, you kind of hinted on it early in the program, but the Colts pitting it on the Chargers out here. That was impressive. That was an impressive offensive showing by the Colts. My guy Steichen delivering again. I'm impressed by the Colts right now.
Aaron, no,
that's a good game, man.
Have you picked against Steichen in all of these like showdown games? Because I mean, him versus the Broncos, you're kind of the Aaron Toler Bowl we named, and now
I took Steichen in that one.
Okay, all right. I just want to make sure.
I did take the Chargers this week, but yeah, I took.
You did, yeah.
The only time I'd gone against the Colts, I was right. I took the Rams to beat them. And I said, we talked about it. I think SoFi might be tough for them, but they just came out pedal to the metal and just pit it on them. They pit it on the Chargers, and the Chargers fought back, but just didn't have enough in the tank to get back in the game. But the Colts, man, they are for real. There's no, this ain't no fluke.
I'm doubling down on my Super Bowl pick for them. They look really nice, dude. They have everything that you want in a team. Love the Colts. Texans just scored right now, 12-17, making it tight. We just need the Seahawks to keep it above 3 points, guys.
Yeah, it looks like it was a sack fumble in the end zone there.
Yeah.
They missed the 2-point conversion, I assume.
Not sure. All right. Yeah,
it did fail, so that's good.
Yeah. We basically covered all the games more or less. I really don't have anything else to kind of speak on it.
The only thing really good today. Yeah, the only thing I'd mention just to the games in Rome, I don't know if we're playing, you know, Rome's hot seat yet, but that Dolphins loss. I don't know what they're looking for McDaniel at this point too, but you're sitting at 1-6. This team looks like lifeless.
I'll say this. I don't know what's going on in the state of Florida, but McDaniels must have the same friends as Norvell, because both those guys should be fucking on the same flight out of town right now.
Well, Billy Napier's out. Yeah. Norvell looks gone.
Norvell will be gone, and McDaniels will be gone too.
It's not a coincidence that Florida's a big party state, and they all look like they're all coked out.
Well, you know, Rome, it's funny you mention that, because a lot of Florida State fans are saying check Norvell's, you know, office to get that, you know, get out of that buyout of $50+ million, you know, get it cut down in half, found a little white substance, and let's negotiate.
By the way, they were going over like buyouts on some network on everyone that's been fired so far. Did not know Deshaun Foster was $6 million, the same as the Virginia Tech coach.
Yeah, because they could have waited. Buyout. It could have went down to $1 million if they waited till December, I believe.
Till December, right? Okay, yeah. That was probably our quickest recap. Any final statements? If we look at the standings, at least,
what's your top eight, Rome?
I do have a new top eight, and it's been kind of tough because I got some guys that I want to put in there, but I just didn't yet. Let me pull off for you. All right. Top eight. They were in the top eight 2 weeks ago. Back at number eight is the Niners with a pretty big win against the Falcons. I know they're home, but they're also depleted. Just great coaching. Everyone's stepping up. McCaffrey having a bounce back season. For the ages, having over 200 yards from scrimmage. Bills, it's a bye week. I haven't had the heart to drop them. I really want to and kind of put like the Pats in there, but they are still number 7. If they lose one more time, or if they have like another uninspiring performance, they will get dropped. Seahawks, number 6. I know this game's not over, but I'm assuming that they're going to be winning. They are at least controlling the ball.
It's kind of the curse of really death, nice. Rome. You probably shouldn't have pinned them in your top eight because everybody that's in your top eight that's playing seems to lose that day. So let's get Seattle out and let's substitute the Patriots in because they beat the Bills. So that was a miscue. Edit that out and let's get Seattle out of that top eight. Save them for Thursday.
You know, Eagles. Go ahead.
And I was going to say, when Rome was talking about Aaron, there's two notable ones, and the Patriots were one of them when he was going through this. I'm like, yeah, I don't know about this, but okay.
Eagles stay in it. They were number seven last week, so tight little victory. They stay in the top five. Bucks dropped down to number four. They were number one last week.
And they got beat. Your top eight cursed, Rome, on a Monday.
They got beat against a really good Lions team. The Rams move up to number three. They were number five last week. Lions back up to number two, rebounding really nicely from their loss. And Colts are the new number one, moving up one spot. So that's the new Power Eight going into week eight. Pats, I did want to put them in there. I'm not ready to put the Chiefs in there yet. I think a win against a competent team will get them in there.
Did you not even have the Broncos in there, Rome?
Did I not have the Broncos.
Broncos were in it 2 weeks ago. And they've had two uninspiring wins. I'm not going to put them in just because they barely inked out of a, you know, jacked up Giants Rome, D.
You're like an AP top 25 that would take the number one team in the country like out of the poll for winning games by like field goals because they weren't impressive wins.
That was the team, Aaron. I want to spoil what you get done. As he read this to me, I was like, you didn't have the Patriots? You didn't have the Broncos in there? But yes, yeah, two wins, but we're taking you out.
Yeah, Broncos don't belong in it yet.
Well, if Seattle ends up losing this game, Rome, and Tampa already lost, I think those two are out, and then Broncos and Patriots would substitute for those two.
I'm not dropping the Bucks from number one to out of the top eight.
You know what? The Bucks 5-2, Rome, -1 point differential on the year.
You know the Eagles? Yeah. Negative yardage in every game.
Okay.
But they're still winning. Style points count, opponents count, on the road or at home, who's playing.
That's
not
fair.
Just record.
Hey, I don't want the Bears anywhere near your top eight, all right? Because there's a curse associated
even
with
even the Packers at 4-1-1, were they in there? Did I hear them?
No, dude, no. They are not in there. They don't get to win.
Second best winning percentage in the league.
They were in it in week five. That was the last time they were in it.
Listen, it's Rome's top eight, Aaron. He's got his reasons. We can't question it.
Not going to. I just want to know, Rome, on Thursday, I want you to reveal your top eight because I know at least two to three of those teams are going to get beat so I could go the other way. So I could kind of calculate that in my formula.
You got to no sell it, though, Aaron, because he can't change it. So you'd be like, hey, give me your eight.
So, yeah, okay. Give it to me. Give me to me right now. So
I just gave
you don't have the Steelers. You don't have what's the Thursday. You don't have the Chargers or Vikings. So I don't need to worry about one of those teams on Thursday.
Who?
But
who?
You don't have the Chargers or Vikings. So I don't have to worry about that.
Chargers fell out a while ago.
Sunday night. What's the Sunday night game coming up this week? What do we got in week eight? Was it Chiefs Washington? No, that's Monday night. Sunday night.
If Seahawks
Green Bay,
lose
Pittsburgh,
today.
So neither one's in there. But so
Pittsburgh. I was debating of, yeah, they fell out. They were four last week, but with everybody else having wins.
Seattle just got a field goal for us, so that's good.
Nice. Yeah, if they lose, I would probably bump up everyone else and put in the Pats over the Broncos.
Well, I think you have to put the Pats in over the Bills. They went into Buffalo and beat them on a primetime Sunday night, and they got a half-game lead in that division. I mean, Broncos, like you said, Rome, they have struggled, but, they are 5-2.
Yeah.
They're better than the 49ers, but what the 49ers are doing is impressive. They're better than that.
As they get guys back on offense, especially, I don't know, I'm kind of liking this Niner team.
Like I told you, Rome, I think it's Steichen and Kyle Shanahan right now, your two coaches of the year front runners, given what they're doing. Ben Johnson will obviously probably be in there as well, but. What Kyle Shanahan's done with that roster, pinning a Band-Aid on it and making it look like a supermodel week in, week out, that's impressive right now for the 49ers.
Oh, that's hilarious.
The thing with it, though, with Shanahan, mostly, like, quarterback play, what he's getting out of Mac Jones right now.
Dude, Mac Jones is phenomenal.
And it was the conversation. I think we talked about it a little bit last year, but I know with a couple of Niners friends I have, when it was about paying Brock Purdy, is like, do you really need to pay a quarterback when you're Kyle Shanahan? Because I feel he can just find the guy that's going to fit within his system and make him successful, you know, with what traits he ever sees. And like paying a bunch of money to not, you know, especially in a salary cap sport, you know, you see where these teams run up against it. Like, you know, the Chiefs, you know, didn't really run on lean times, but kind of ran on lean times because they had to get rid of Tyreek and other weapons and had to figure other ways to win. Putting all that money into a quarterback really limits what you can do and some of the other personnel and playmakers around the team. And when the Niners were their best, you know, remember they were paying dudes on or quarterback on a rookie contract, and they were able to have great linebackers, great offensive line, you know, great skill players and make the quarterback better. I mean, it's a different way of doing things, but you got to have the right coach. And Shanahan, for all of his faults, I know the Niners aren't happy all the time with Shanahan, but I agree with Aaron. Like, this is real coach of the year stuff type stuff, because hey, you're getting the most out of a team that's, you're just signing dudes off practice squads in the street and making it worth your while to a 5-2 record.
Not only that, every coach that's really coordinated on his staff gets a head coaching gig too, right? Sala, D'Amico Ryan's here, McDaniel's there at Miami. I mean, it sounds like eventually they're all going to make their way back to him. But yeah, real impressive what he's done there for sure for the 49ers. I mean, their schedule is going to get probably a little bit tougher. We can make fun of how their schedule is kind of soft, but you know, beating Atlanta, and that game really wasn't, I mean, it's close. The score was close, but the 49ers really were dominating that game. They were really in control throughout. That impressive win on a Thursday night with what, 9 starters out combined on offense, defense. You just lose Fred Warner. It's impressive stuff what they're doing.
NFC West, man. You got Niners, Rams, and Seahawks. Seahawks potentially can go to 5-2. And you got 3 teams in there, 5-2. That is wild. And then your guys' division, NFC North, the 4-1-1 pack, 5-2 Lions, 4-2 Bears, and the Vikings at 3-3.
So, 3 playoff teams again from that division?
I don't know, man. It's too early to say. I think the NFC, though, it's definitely deep. And you're talking about, well, we only crossed out the Cardinals, Saints, and the Giants. You guys crossed them out. Any other teams to add or not yet, huh? I don't think we're ready to add any other teams on the cross.
No, I was gonna ask before I got sidetracked. Where do you think Mac Jones ends up next year? Since everybody that goes to play for Shanahan always goes somewhere else. I mean, Darnold now shining. Where do you think Mac Jones? Where's a good landing spot for him next year?
I don't know, man. It's too early to say.
I mean, the Jets are always in the market for a quarterback, but
you think Aaron Glenn survives?
I don't know.
I don't know. You were on him pretty early, Aaron, that was not one of your favorite coaching hires. And it's again, I was going to bring it up during the Saleh conversation, but another one of those guys that, hey, great job defensively, but defensive coordinator, not a head coach.
I just, he got put in a losing situation too, though. But that's tough. All right, so we've already crossed off Jets, Titans, Browns, Saints, Dolphins, Raiders. I think we did that last week. We had Bengals, Ravens, Cowboys, Cardinals, and Giants on the life support list. Nothing changes as of week 7, right?
What are the Cardinals right now? 2-5.
Yeah,
I'll bury them. They're not gonna get third or second in that division. So I'll bury them.
All right. They get promoted to the buried list.
Giants?
Sounds good. You put them on the life support list. Actually, Aaron, you did put them on the X list, but I did not fully convert that for you yet.
Oh, the Giants?
Yeah, just because it was mentioned at the end of the pod.
I don't know. They got at Eagles next week, Niners, then at Bears.
I think that could ruin some people's schedules, man.
Yeah, but we're talking about making the playoffs, right? Or any shot at making the playoffs.
Well, just, you know, just having anything to the roof for this.
Look at
year,
Rome.
You know?
Like, I'll put it this way. They were on live support, and the Broncos took their heartbeat with that winner. So they're dead to me. They are dead to me. But I like them. I'm one of the guys that actually...
Think they still got a lot to play for this year.
I'll say this. Dable's on live support, but the team in general, I think, is dead for making the playoffs.
Playoffs, yeah, but they got a lot to play for. Guys, we are recapping Major League Baseball, both the AL and NLCS. We're recording Monday night. It's almost 10 as we're watching the end of the Seahawks Texans game, which I can't believe we're watching football now at 10 o'clock at night. There's college football games going on till midnight. Like, what's wrong with us? You know, some of us have lives, things to do. There should not be college football on at like 11:30 at night. Pro football should be done by now.
They say that on the East Coast every week, but you know what? That's why they're not in God's time zone. So, you know,
that's
imagine living on the East Coast right now at 10 o'clock and a game still going on.
Wait, oh, it's 1 o'clock over there almost.
Well, not even that. The Texans, if you're a Texans, what is it?
That's Central Time.
Yeah. So.
Yeah. Well, it's hot over there, you know, so I probably wouldn't mind being out at a bar. Nice little.
I mean, you are the father.
Cowboy heat.
You are the father. This is a school night. So if you're a young Texans fan, just wants to see how your team's doing.
I did keep my daughter up to watch a Steelers game last year. I'm like, it doesn't matter. We're staying up and watching this.
On a Sunday night or what?
All right. So let's talk a little baseball. Pretty epic stuff. When we recorded last time, last Thursday, it was game 4. Well, Dodgers, first of all, won a great game 3, one run. Aaron, you had a question, though. What's the least amount of runs someone has scored in a championship series? And I think they answered in the broadcast the next day. It is your 96 Braves that kept the opposing team run one or less for that championship series. Dodgers are the first team since then to have the opposing team.
So the Braves held the team to 4 runs or less in a series, and now the Dodgers have done the same. Okay.
Yes. 96, which I believe was a good year for the Braves.
The 90s are a bit of a blur, man. a lot of good years, a lot of bad years in there.
A lot of division titles, not a lot of World Series.
Exactly. The only thing I remember in the 90s that was good was the Bulls and MJ and those guys. So if we're not talking hoops, I'm not really interested in bringing up the old Braves past.
Well, I remember Nebraska being really good. I really enjoyed that. All was good stuff. But,
Rome, the 90s were great. The Bulls were good. The Braves were good. Florida State was good. Now they're all just, you know, we don't even talk about them anymore.
The Niners won a couple. All the Steelers fan as well. All right. So anyways, game 4, Friday night, I was driving up from LA up back to the Bay with my daughter, and Shohei Ohtani, I always jack up his name. Shohei Ohtani was the game 4 pitcher.
Shohei, what
name are you saying, man? I know we all butcher names, but it's Shohei, right? I don't know.
Yeah.
Just say Ohtani.
Ohtani. Yeah. Let's just stick to Ohtani. So Ohtani was the game 4 pitcher. He strikes out the first 3 batters. And when he goes up to bat next, he just absolutely fucking crushes it. It was his first of 3 home runs that game. He ended up pitching 6 innings, 6 plus. Dave Roberts, I liked when he took him out, when he put 2 guys on base. I thought he still had some decent command, but he's like, screw it. Let's get him out of there. They were able to get out of the jam. 10 Ks, though, in 6 innings. Pretty phenomenal stuff. 3 home runs. They said one of those home runs went like 475, but they kind of cut it short because I haven't seen too many home runs that I can remember just clearly hit the top deck in the outfield. He absolutely crushed it, but it was like a magical game just seeing him command it. 100 miles per hour plus on some of his fastballs. He had a really sick-ass splitter as well, but it was just amazing to see. And the Dodgers sweep the Milwaukee Brewers to go back to the World Series. Today, we were gifted, well, over the weekend, a Game 6 and a Game 7 from the Seattle Mariners and Toronto Blue Jays. Mariners were up, man. They were up. They looked like they were controlling today's game. And then just a couple guys got on base and the swing of a bat, bam, 3-run home run for them to go up. What was the final score? 4-3. And then they just kind of took command. Seattle looked like they had nothing left in the tank in the last 3 innings. It was pretty wild. So Toronto will face the Dodgers in the World Series. It is in Toronto, I believe, right?
Yeah, it starts in Toronto, yeah, on Friday.
Which is pretty wild. They got some big bats. the bats came in clutch against Seattle. So Seattle fails to make their first World Series ever. And I think this is the first time in like 30 years for Toronto themselves. I don't know any comments you guys want to put in from like the both AL and NLCS.
Well, I'll start with the NLCS. We were texting during the Ohtani game. They said it on the broadcast or recap afterwards. Like, this was a legendary playoff performance from Ohtani. Like, even the runners he gave up, you said, but like shutout, 10 Ks, as you mentioned, six innings, three home runs. I mean, when I looked at the, it was like 3 for 3 with three home runs or something. Like, you're doing all the work yourself. I don't know the final WAR. Ohtani's got some insane games where it's like 10 WAR in a game or something like that that he's had, like, versus like the Marlins or some random games like that he's had. But this one in the postseason, in a closeout game, this is what you paid him for. What was it, $700 million? That's probably a bargain at this point on that contract, for considering how popular this guy is in Japan and what he's bringing the overall value to the team. But just, it's unreal what you're watching. And you want to appreciate these moments. Aaron and I, we hate on you enough, Rome, with the Dodgers, especially since the Dodgers apparently are going to get Scooble and Kyle Tucker here in the offseason too. We're just going to buy whatever free agents those are that are out there. But you got to appreciate Ohtani in this time, because I think people will try to duplicate this and try to find the next guy they can both pitch and hit. It's not that easy. I mean, even looking at the NFL, when we look at like Travis Hunter, oh, he's going to play wide receiver, play quarterback. I mean, he's good, but it's not great yet. And there hasn't been, since Babe Ruth, we're talking about it, in which, different time, different era. This is against elite competition for guys that have played baseball their entire lives, conditioned for it. And he's one of the best at both to do it. And it's just such a weapon inside the game. Like, even going six in the playoffs, you see how quick the managers are with like yanking these guys after going like through the order like once, maybe twice. And he gets the six innings, strikes out 10. No one was really any match for him. Just absolutely legendary performance.
Yeah, one thing about Ohtani, Babe Ruth, he was a pitcher, then he became a hitter. Didn't do it at the same time. I think very briefly in one World Series where he did both positions, but Ohtani is doing something that no one has done. And I think there's, 12 pitchers that had 10 strikeouts in a playoff game. Another 12 players that had 3 home runs in the same game, and this guy does it all in one game. It was pretty special. Everybody on both sides, on both teams, we're just like in awe, like what the hell is going on? And not just like getting hits, absolutely crushing the ball. There's like a weird pop that comes off the bat. And to think that he was just tucked away down the 5 freeway in Anaheim, like you would think like this is what you want, a great player like that to kind of come to like a bigger stage and see if they could take it up to another level. And he's actually doing that. Like, he's actually living up and doing even more than the hype. It is absolutely crazy. It's wild. And I know it's my Dodgers, so I'm pretty happy about it. So I'll be rooting for them in the playoffs. But out of all the super teams that I've seen or we've seen in our lifetime, this is a really likable team. I can't think of one asshole on this team that's like a real prick. Whereas like I could think of like any Yankees team, even my beloved Red Sox, I could pick a player or two that are complete jerks. But this is a really likable Dodgers team. So it's just amazing. But Ohtani, like, absolutely killed it.
Yeah, Rome, I mean, Ohtani sealed the deal there in game 4, right? I mean, you mentioned that both teams were in awe. I mean, the Brewers seemed to be in awe the whole series, as you touched on. I mean, 4 runs in 4 games combined. That's not going to get it done against any team. I mean, Shohei was lights out on the mound, 6 innings, 10 strikeouts, 100 pitches. So nice to see Dave Roberts extend him. I wasn't sure if he's still going to be on a pitch count going 70, 75 pitches. So that's good to see that he's got the arm stretched out and ready to go, because they're gonna need him here in the World Series. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah.
I mean, we'll get more into that. But for the Brewers, Jason touched on it. That was one of the more impressive seasons they've had in franchise history, getting to the NLCS. Expected more from them, hoping for more. We didn't get that in that series. And the other series, Seattle, Toronto, gave us the drama, gave us the 7 games coming down to the wire. Springer with that 3-run home run in the 7th, getting Toronto over the top. But yeah, man, the Dodgers, Rome, you know, that's a really good, fair point. I mean, they don't really have guys on their team that, you know, people don't like, right? I mean, everybody,
that's what I'm shocked about the most.
Everybody loves Freddie Freeman. You know, I'm not a big Ohtani guy. I think he's the dirtiest player in the game for other reasons, but, you know, we'll have to do a separate pod for that.
Dude, the funniest meme that I saw, I think it was on Threads, actually. Someone's like, now I know why baseball let him walk away. This guy is absolutely phenomenal.
Absolutely.
That's what they had to interpret, take the fall.
Absolutely true on that. But, yeah, I mean, Will Smith's a good guy. I mean, Dave Roberts is even a cool manager, even though he's gotten a lot of slack. But this is, what, his fifth World Series in 10 years?
Dude, I wanted him fired a long time ago, but I think he's done.
Well, I mean, Dave Roberts, job. I mean, look at Dave Roberts was what James Franklin was at Penn State, could never win the big, big series, right? And then, I mean, I don't count the COVID one. I don't count that. So they really only got
all
one,
right,
in my
get
book.
Out of here. All right.
But nice. I mean, everybody knows that. Everybody knows that. Yeah. Any LA fan or real fan will tell you that. Nobody wanted a World Series during that COVID year.
Get out
so
of here, dude.
They only got one, but still, I mean, he's done a great job getting them there. But now they, you know, it's interesting because now they run into Springer, who basically, he loves playing against the Dodgers here in October. I think it's going to I think it's gonna be a really good series. I think I text you guys. I think this is going to go seven games. It's going to be better than people think. I think it's going to be similar to like the NBA Finals where it's just going to be a really, really good series. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's going to be a really, really good series that's going to go seven games, I do believe.
Springer had a clutch home run today, man. It was really on the money.
That dude is clutch. What, he's got nine home runs in the postseason career or something like that?
Yeah, today's game seven. Seattle controlled it, man. It seemed like they were like on their way to go their first World Series. It was in the seventh inning that everything just kind of flipped the switch. And then after that, Seattle just looked in disbelief. They just looked lost, man. Three-run home run shot in the bottom of the seventh, and Toronto, their pitchers took care of business and they got the outs when they needed to. Got a couple really nice double plays to get them out of some jams in the eighth and ninth inning. And look, they got Springer, they got Vladdy, lots of guys that can hit on that Toronto team. It's going to be really fun. Mariners, they had their chances to win this series. I thought they should have went to the World Series, and the Blue Jays bats were just too much for them.
Yeah, the Mariners remain, I believe, the only MLB team never to have been to the World Series.
And they were as close as you can get. And Game 7, that's heartbreaking. That's rough.
That's the first time they got to a Game 7, yeah.
Dude, that's so rough.
I mean, you looked at that scoreboard when they were closing out the game. It's like Game 7, 3-2 count, two outs, down one run. Like, you can't – I mean, I guess bases loaded would have the only thing that made it even closer for them if they would have got to that. But the Springer home run was just – it was over after that. Like, it was deflating and was texting
Soul
with
Crusher.
Yeah, I was texting to some friends during that who, you know, watching playoff baseball. They're big basketball guys. That's their sport. Obviously, the nation's football. But we're talking about like postseason sports, television, being in the stadium. Like, to me, playoff hockey is the number one playoff out there. Like, can't beat the stress as a fan in playoff hockey, the excitement, the anticipation of a goal. Playoff baseball to me is a close second. And I put, Rome, I don't know if you saw, I posted on Instagram a couple weeks ago when I went to the 2021 ALDS with the last time the White Sox were in the playoffs.
You did. Yeah. I saw that.
Yeah. Versus the Astros in a game that I'll be at, like, White Sox were down 2-0 in a best of five. It's basically elimination for the White Sox. And, you know, they needed that game. The White Sox do this blackout thing. Everyone's all dressed in black. It's a night game. Just in the energy, you can't even describe what it's like in the stadium for that. And if you watched on TV when Springer hits that home run and what it's like inside Rogers Center, like, just you can feel the goosebumps kind of going through you at that moment and what the atmosphere is like. It doesn't really compare like a sold out baseball stadium in those moments like that. Like, as an opposing team, that is just deflating. To get that momentum back and everything about it, because that stadium had to be like all sorts of electric. That was just rumbling and like just all the energy was just amazing stuff. And that's like really where baseball really shines. Like, you go through this 162, you know, just grueling grind, but you get to like these moments and stuff in baseball that just, it just beats so much of the other stuff within sports. Like football postseason is great. We're looking for the big games, basketball, you know, there's some moments, but it never really kind of captures it. Like there's a lot of blowouts in those series, but man, you get some of this baseball stuff. It's just, it's incredible, incredible moments.
Well, baseball is interesting. You point that out because you get all the home games and you basically, the stadium fills up like the Rose Bowl. It's half empty. And then all of a sudden October comes and like everybody's there and everybody's just going nuts, whiteouts, towels, crazy. I mean, Rogers Center was going nuts. I mean, it was loud. It was loud in there. I mean, Springer basically hits a home run. The dude's out of breath for like 10 minutes after hitting a home run. Like just the adrenaline going through you. He's like just trying to catch his breath. Like you can just feel the energy like, man, it's a different animal. It's a different atmosphere. And, you know, Toronto right now, they're riding that wave. I mean, they feel a lot like Texas did a couple years ago when they just kind of got hot, rode that wave, won a World Series. I really like this Toronto team. They've got the bats. This is the worst matchup for the Dodgers. I mean, Seattle would have been great for them because they don't hit. This team's hitting, and what's good for Toronto, 5 through 9 are hitting too. And then that's giving guys, Vlad, Springer, guys on base to bring in. Like I said, Rome, I think it's going to be a really, really good, fun, entertaining series. I think we're in for a good one.
100%. Baseball, by the way, their attendance has risen for 3 years straight, regular season and postseason, ever since they did the changes to the rules. People have been coming out in droves. So attendance has been up in almost every ballpark outside of the Sacramento A's. And same thing with merchandise. So their commissioner, give them whatever shit you want, but the changes that they made for baseball has paid dividends, and we'll see what comes out after this World Series if we end up going to a lockout to make more changes to salary cap and stuff like that.
Bo Bichette said he is playing in the World Series too.
He's been out a while, yeah?
Since September, yeah. September. So
yeah, he's been out.
You're adding maybe more firepower to this offense that's really rolling.
We'll see. It'll be big bats against the Dodgers' awakened aces on the mound. So should be pretty fun. Game one is this Friday. Maybe we'll do a quick little World Series preview when we record. Be good.
I mean, yeah. NFL I mean, lines. The Dodgers going to have that starting pitching because their bullpen gets in this series. I saw an interesting stat when I was listening to the post game. Blue Jays, 50 comeback wins this year, led Major League Baseball. So this is a team that's not afraid to come back. They're not afraid of them. They were down 2-0 in this series, went on the road and won 2. Grand slam by Jason's guy, like we mentioned, Eugenio Suarez, stole game 5. And then they're down here, and they just find a way to win. So they're not going to be an easy out at all. The Dodgers, this is going to be like the Dodgers-Padres series of last year. It's going to be a grind.
We're here to talk F1. Jason, Aaron, we had a fun race this past Sunday. It was in the middle of the day, a noon o'clock kickoff time, or I don't know what you call
a noon start o'clock time.
Noon o'clock? Is that a thing?
I don't think noon o'clock
is now.
It is now. And also, we're not kicking it off in F1 either. I think you're still on the NFL side.
What's like a good way to phrase it? You know,
The green flag dropped.
Okay. Green flag dropped at 12. In between all the football games, I had the split screen going on. Then once the race started, we put it back on, or it became 1-4, plus the laptop, plus the tablet. Then my daughter was like, put it on the big screen. I want to watch the racing. So that took the main TV, and then I was watching 4 games on the little tablet. But it was a really fun race. I think one of the more exciting ones of the year so far. Whereas Verstappen wins again. I think this is like his third victory in the past 4 or 5 races. Lando had a pretty good race. I feel like he could have possibly competed a little bit with Verstappen, but he got stuck behind Leclerc for a big portion of that race. Had some tire temperature issues in the second half after that pit stop because he switched to the softs. I thought like the communication with his pit crew telling him to chill the fuck out, let the tires cool down, and we'll still have a chance to take the second spot away from Leclerc, I thought it was wonderful. Outside of that, we had like a few cars spin around. Everybody was losing their tires. It was pretty wild. I guess everyone was kind of talking about the tire strategy, going from mediums to soft or soft to mediums. And then we had some issues and some drama with the sprint, which I finally saw the replay today, and people were blaming Hulk, whereas a lot of people were saying like it was definitely Piastri's fault. And I still don't know what the little self-imposed penalties have been handed down to Lando with McLaren, but it is getting really tight in the driver's race. It's getting tight for position 2, 3, and 4 in the constructors. As you know, McLaren already won that. But Jason, take it away, man.
Yeah, I think starting the weekend with the sprint race, because that was probably the biggest highlight of the weekend. You know, texted you guys when it was going on, because lap one, both McLarens knocked out. You mentioned the blame on Hulk. That was Zach Brown. McLaren CEO basically said live on the broadcast, is basically, I forgot what he said.
Yeah, it was like an amateur move.
Well, it was by his driver Piastri, because he was the one who caused the thing when they went back and look at it. And Zach Brown actually fessed up to it, I think, later during the qualifying thing. He's like, hey, you guys look back at him. He's like, yeah, there's nothing Hulk could have done there. Da, da, da. I was like, yeah, because Piastri basically turned in on him because he was trying to make the move to get under Lando. And just it's a tough turn in Austin, because you're going uphill, doing this basically U-turn around, and you know, you're going down that stretch and you're trying to make a move into the shuffle. But you know, Lando was the most unfortunate part of that, because you know, he didn't get the best start, but he had Piastri at the apex, had the right line to where it was going. Piastri tries to basically double back him, you know, turns down into the Sauber of Hülkenberg. Hülkenberg couldn't move because he had Fernando Alonso inside of him. It was almost four wide basically in that turn. And then as Piastri gets knocked up by Hülkenberg, as he runs into him, his car spins and then hits Lando, who was also packed, and then knocked him out. So it was crazy, because it basically gave Verstappen a free 8 points on both of them in the sprint. And that was pretty much it at that point. The sprint was interesting, because there was a ton of yellow flags and stuff, because these guys are really going at it. And I think that's the point of kind of the sprint, you know, format, is not just a bunch of practices. When you're getting to a weekend, you actually get some racing, and these guys really going at each other in a short format race. But that kind of took us into the weekend and the qualifying, where it was, you know, Verstappen was still so dominant. You had, you know, the Ferraris actually looked fairly decent in this race, although just these guys continually worrying about the wear and tear of their floorboard is just hilarious, you know, going into the race, because they're just worried about just shaving so much down that they're going to be under regulation and get disqualified. They did in China. Like, I don't know how many races they're telling Lewis basically to lift and coast so he doesn't tear up the bottom of the car. But yeah, I mean, overall, Rome, exciting race. I'll be honest, I didn't watch live. One of the few I didn't watch live.
We saw your message. You're basically ready to take Rome's head off.
I was writing a bunch of text messages, and then Rob and I started text. I was like, all right, cool, I'm going to hold off. I deleted everything.
he got a little worried, Rome.
The context of it was like, Rome's just like, oh, this one's going on the big screen. So to me, it was like, oh, man, it's really going down. Little did I know, this is about your daughter. It's going on the big screen because of that. Because, yeah, I couldn't watch live. It was either watch the Bears game or watch the F1 race. I was getting on a flight. I'm watching it just on my phone. Couldn't do a multi-view screen on it. So I'm just like, hey, locked in the Bears game. Watch Austin as soon as I get home. Try to stay away.
Have two phones?
Couldn't watch on both phones, man. You know?
Was he with the wife?
Yeah,
that's why I didn't have the two phones. All right,
that would have been another $8 in Wi-Fi there to pay for Southwest to watch these things going on. You know, so I'm not paying for that for a 1 hour flight from the Bay Area.
He'll watch it at Dodger Stadium, but he won't pay the $8. I'm not buying it, Rome. I'm just not buying it.
I watched one race at Dodger Stadium. You know, I didn't need both phones for that. Jeez. All right. Anyways, going into that, I thought, you know, something was really going on, but Verstappen dominant in the race. Norris versus Leclerc, I think, was like the highlight back and forth, you know, throughout the race. You mentioned, Rome, I think Norris super patient, understanding he needed to get that second, was never going to catch Max, and it was really about biding his time to pass Leclerc and get the maximum amount of points possible. Piastri never looked comfortable, never looked good in the race, couldn't really even track on Hamilton, who was solid, but you know, he couldn't really even get away from Russell, but held them behind there.
Well, when I was watching the race, it got really exciting because Norris was trying to pass like Leclerc, like starting like at like lap 8, and he got really close. Leclerc, really great defensive driver. I don't think I've ever seen him drive like that. Definitely one of the best drivers out there. but just would not let Lando pass. And I think that kind of messed up Lando's long-term game. Cause I think if Lando could have passed it, he could have definitely at least made it competitive and possibly catch up to Verstappen towards the end. Cause Verstappen was having issues throughout the race as well, especially with tires after the pit stop, but just couldn't get past him. I thought Leclerc did a great job with him. You know, finally when he did, once he saved his tires, it was pretty fun to see, but yeah, it was really tight. They were battling a lot and trying to decide when to pit, when not to pit. And it was just really interesting seeing all the communication going down in the race. That's why I put it on the big screen. It was just a lot more action. I already kind of figured the games in the morning were kind of decided more or less. And then my daughter loved the purple car, the pink car, you know, so she's she finally learned whose logos are what. So she was rooting for Gasly. Saw that he was at 12th. I think that was like at around like lap 20 or so. And then she's like keeping track of it, seeing him continue getting passed up. He's like at 18th, get passes by his own teammates to 19. She was pretty devastated, almost in tears. But it was really good stuff, but she really loved it. But I thought it was really entertaining from top down. And just Max, dude, I can't believe he's won 4 out of the last 5 races. The drivers is really close now. He's within 40 points. Even Lando, he's chipped away, although he hasn't been able to take advantage as much in the last few races. He's within striking distance as well. What is it, 18 points now? It's 14. So much fun. 14. It's so much fun, man. How many races we got left now? 4 or 5?
We got 5. We got Mexico, Brazil, Vegas.
Mexico's in 2 weeks?
This Mexico weekend. Is this weekend.
Oh, shit.
That's a, yeah, 1 p.m. And then following that, 2 weeks later would be Brazil, Sao Paulo.
Okay.
So then you got the 2 Middle East races in Qatar and Abu Dhabi to end the season. So, yeah, there's a lot. I mean, we think back to in the Dutch Grand Prix with Lando's engine blowing and Piastri winning and really turned the championship upside down at that point. We're thinking, man, this lead's insurmountable. But, I mean, since, you know, that race, give or take, like, you know, the McLaren car for this second half has not been nearly, you know, as dominant. When you look at Italy, Azerbaijan, they didn't even podium. Singapore, only Norris. You know, they haven't won a race since Piastri won at the Dutch Grand Prix and Lando blew up. And so there hasn't been this dominant second half where we were talking at that race. Like, man, like Lando's got to win out. He's got to beat Piastri every week. It's going to be 1-2 McLaren finishes. And it hasn't been. This McLaren car isn't there. The Red Bull has found pace, both with Verstappen and then even with Tsunoda a little bit. The Mercedes has been a little more competitive. The Ferrari's kind of just lingering there. They're not threatened to win, but you know, they're around the podium finishes. So it's not a slam dunk every week you're getting McLaren 1-2. And that makes this 14-point lead that Piastri's got not that insurmountable for Lando, but these two guys going at each other has allowed Verstappen just lingering around here in the background. And we've talked about it throughout the year. Didn't think it was possible, but, you know, they wipe each other out and take 8 points off the board in a sprint. Cool, he's there. He's winning these races, getting that 25-18, basically a 7-point gain, even on first and second. There's room for him to chip back at it. And it's tough to, you know, Max is the best driver in the world, hands down. We've said it before. You know, I'm a big Lewis Hamilton fan, thinking he's the greatest of all time. But right now, Verstappen, you put this guy in really any car, he figures out how to make it work. And this Red Bull hasn't been good for a year and a half, almost 2 years at this point. And he's gotten the most out of it. And even in this year, he's kind of dragged this car to the finish line where they're putting him in a position to win this championship. It's an outside chance, but the McLarens aren't great. The Red Bull's getting better. You go to Vegas, I'm putting that one as a percentile Mercedes track. It's going to be cold in Vegas. Mercedes,
Russell, man. I'll be betting that one hard. I'm going Russell.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think Russell in Vegas is a smart move, just like the Canada race that – that was so good when it was cold. It's going to be a cold race in Vegas. So there's stuff on this calendar that does not favor McLaren, and that even more favors Verstappen, because if he gets, hey, you get a 2-position difference in one of these guys and Piastri's not stringing, you know, good qualifyings at Orlando, it gets closer and closer.
Out of this past race, I thought Ferrari did really well. They got Leclerc and Hamilton. Was this like his best finish or like pretty close to it?
Yeah.
Might be his best.
Might be his best, at least tied. He hasn't been on the podium this year. You know, his best race was the win in the sprint, but that's not just a regular race. He won that sprint in China early on. But yeah, he hasn't gotten the podium yet. This is, I think he tied or is his best finish. They're looking better. We'll see how this translates to the 2026 car. But I think just having good results and get more comfortable to the Ferrari machinery is good for Hamilton, because next year it's really a wide open beast, and we continue to talk about that. We'll talk more in probably our 2026 season preview, but I think getting good results for them. And I think for Fred Vasseur, if you're looking team principal of Ferrari, you want to sew up second in the constructors, and Mercedes, Red Bull, and Ferrari are all within 10 points of each other right now for second, third, and fourth. So these races mean something to both of those kind of teams, and that'll be, I think, a tight down the stretch.
Yeah, Mercedes is just what, like 7 points, 6 points?
They are 7 points ahead of Ferrari, and then yeah. Ferrari's only 3 points ahead of Red Bull.
That's amazing, man. That's so crazy. It's going to be a fun finish.
Yeah, I mean, it looks like Williams is probably going to take fifth. They got a little cushion there, so.
They had a bad weekend.
They did.
Yeah,
I mean, for Williams.
Albon
was bad. Sainz, crashed out. Them, it's really just been consistency, because they've gotten good finishes, but man, they blow through things. Or
well, if it seems like they don't finish or get like 18, 20, then the next week they'll come back and get 6th and 9th.
Yes.
You know, 100%. Yeah. That's so I expect one, if not both, to finish in the top 10 in Mexico City. I'm going to look to see if there's odds. I'll pick one of them to get in the top 10 if I can find it when it comes out later this week.
Like it. Yeah, it looks like Williams Wolf. Yeah. I think they'll probably lock in that fifth. It's all about two, three, four.
It's probably mostly locked in. You just got to look at, you think of the rain race in Brazil be the look at. What's the weather in Brazil? Tends to be a rain race. That's where the Alpines got second and third last year and just skyrocketed them from the bottom of
If it's a rain race again, given where we're at the leaderboard, is it, not going to be a lot of chances? Just kind of play it safe, not to get to at least get some points if you're McLaren and those guys, knowing that you do something stupid, you don't get no points if that's the case. Or will we have another weather delay like we had one of those races where they just said, hey, it's too wet and too rainy?
The way Piastri is driving, man, I have a feeling they're going to have an accident, him and Norris, at one of these races, and it might derail both their championship hopes.
Norris takes a lot of chances, but Piastri's been doing a lot of stupid stuff here lately as well.
Norris got so close to crashing with Leclerc on the race. Like,
oh, he got real
15
close.
And 20 by. I'm
like when
oh
they get
God,
when they
pit
like tire
it,
when they did like
it.
Tire to tire. I'm like, oh man, don't do it. And even track limits. I mean, I don't think it would have hurt him, but I know Jason, we didn't touch on
didn't
it.
Have
but,
a lot
I mean,
of, yeah, didn't Norris have a lot had of like penalties.
No, he had 3 strikes. The fourth one would have been a 5 second penalty, right?
Oh, really?
It was, yeah. He beat Leclerc by 7 seconds, but that's because he got ahead of him at the end. But it could have came into it where that 5 seconds did. And there was a lot of people with track limits in this race.
Yeah. I think half the field, to be honest. They were just like, track limit. But they were telling Leclerc, like, hey, Norris is on his track limits. Like, push him and try to get him to do it, So, interesting.
That's interesting. Cool. Any predictions for Mexico City?
Yeah, Mexico City, interesting track. Big fan of this track. You mentioned the Williams. Carlos Sainz won in Ferrari last year, Aaron. So if you're looking for one of your Williams drivers, that could be a place for Sainz there.
I remember watching this race at the bar.
Yep.
Was this the bar race last year? It might have been.
It sounds like a 1 o'clock afternoon for you, yeah. But
was that Shanghai Kelly's?
I don't know if it's 1 p.m. or 1 a.m. Either one's good for Rome at the bar.
It was something.
But you look at Verstappen prior to this one, like the last 3-4 prior. So I think it's a good race for Verstappen too. So McLaren needs to hang on here at this point and get the second and third if they can't get the win over Verstappen. It'll be curious on what the cars are looking like. The McLaren just hasn't looked good. It does not have the same edge. Mexico City, big, long straightaway. You know, after, you know, into a turn one, right, left, right, and then another big stretch. So, you know, those are the things where Red Bull takes some chances and maybe mess around with the wing and do some stuff where it gets increased, you know, straightaway speed, where the McLaren doesn't do well in some of the high stretch areas, which is like, hey, the Vegas race when they're going down the strip, and this race in Mexico City, you know, some things to consider up where they're not as dominant. So they're going to have to take as many points as they can and just like stop the bleeding basically and hope Verstappen just, you know, runs out of time. I mean, they're a sense doing the 6 minute drive, trying to kick the field goal at the end of the game to try to make sure the other team doesn't get the ball.
I'm about to pace myself because this Sunday we got football. I got my comedy special at the comedy club this Sunday night in San Francisco, F1 race.
So I'll basically Rome will be recording Monday again. That's all I need to know. I'll put that in my notes. Recording Monday.
Oh yeah,
you're gonna be trashed on Sunday. So that's good.
I'll be on stage. It's my feature this Sunday. So yeah, I'll be on.
I'll give Rome the pass because I cannot record on Sunday either, Aaron. I will be out of the state again. So Saturday in Arizona, you know, we're switching sports a little bit, or sports. NXT, WWE's feeder brand, Halloween Havoc. Wow. On Prescott Valley. So I'll be out over there, you know, seeing a WWE show on Saturday. And then, you know, you got Bears F1. So then I got to be driving back from Arizona. So I won't put it all on you, Rome. I can't record either. So, but you're doing the big comedy stuff. I'll just be watching a little pro wrestling F1 and Bears football here in a week.
Halloween Havoc, man, brings back good memories.
Ah, yes, it does.
Nice. That'll do it for F1 then. We'll recap Mexico City next week. I'm looking forward to it.